Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Wonder where I'm going to live? Paradise Falls, a land lost in time. I ripped this right out of a library book. I'm going to move my clubhouse there and park it right next to the falls. Who knows what lives up there? And once I get there, well, I'm saving these pages for all the adventures I'm going to have. Only, I just don't know how I'm going to get to Paradise Falls. That's it! You can take us there in a blimp! Swear you'll take us! Cross your heart! Cross it! Cross your heart! Good, you promised. No backing out. Well, see you tomorrow, kid. Bye! Adventure it up there! You know, you don't talk very much. I like you.
I just love that movie. It's Up. It's a Pixar film, and makes me want to go watch it again. In fact, when we were doing some pre-production here, both me and Jeff said, doesn't it make you want to sit down and watch these movies again? Not only because they're compelling stories and very interesting to watch, but the characters and the humanity, the virtue and the moral and spiritual themes there are pretty obvious. It probably accounts for their tremendous success. Joining us to talk about the spiritual and moral themes of Pixar films, Robert Velarde. He's a regular guest, a writer, educator, and philosopher, father of four children in Colorado, and author of several books, including his latest, The Wisdom of Pixar. Robert, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Always wonderful to be on.
Of all the movies that Pixar has made, these animated films, the one we heard there in our open, Up, about this old man and this little kid and this dog that just made the movie for me, very simple storytelling. That one just seemed to not just strum the heartstrings, but go deeper than even the emotions into some real basic human experience. What was it about that film for you that came through with moral and spiritual themes?
Well, it certainly was, I think, one of their finest films. And in fact, it was only the second animated film to be nominated for Best Picture, not just its own separate category, which it did win this year for Best Animated Feature, but Best Feature Film. Prior to that, it had been many years, I think, since Disney's Beauty and the Beast was the only other animated film to be nominated for that award. I think what did it for me is just the entire theme of love that was present throughout that film. And the clip we just heard, of course, is a depiction of the little girl, Ellie, with the young boy, Carl, who end up, of course, growing up and getting married and having a long and wonderful and challenging life together. And, of course, you know, in the end, Carl is alone. His wife passes away, and he really wants to do something meaningful to honor her and her memory, which sort of sets the sequence of events going in that film. And I certainly think it was one of their finest.
You mentioned the theme of love, and they knew what they're doing. These people, they kind of seem to have a spyglass into the basic human reaction. They chose as one of the characters this dog that by miracle of technology is able to talk. And this dog is constantly exhibiting this kind of not only selfless love, unconditional love, but self-sacrificing love too. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, I opened the chapter actually with a quote from this dog. His name is actually Doug. And, you know, he begins talking to this old man, Carl, and this little boy, Russell. And, you know, he just exhibits everything we typify, I guess, as to the dog. You know, he's all happy, his tongue's hanging out. He's just met these people, and he says to them, I have just met you, and I love you. And I sort of jump off from that quote into the chapter, into the, I guess, the deeper theme of love and how it relates to Christian ethics and how it really flows through that movie. And Pixar certainly knows what they're doing when they craft these films. You know, they've had an unprecedented string of success in these Hollywood studios, as far as that goes. You know, Up was their 10th film, And now they've got Toy Story 3 due out just later this month on June 18th. And I think what is in there is a real gift at crafting a story. And really, back in the early days of Pixar, they turned to Aristotle and Aristotelian ideas as far as how to get your story put together. And I'm sure they've added other elements since then, but being able to craft these characters in such a way and put them on a screen with this technical computer-generated brilliance, I think is something that they've done consistently that no other studio has been able to match.
When we talk about virtue, you mentioned Aristotle. I mean, if you look it up in the dictionary, we tend to think of it as moral virtue, that is kind of a moral quality, positive moral quality. But if you look it up, it actually means strength. Talk about the notion or the return of virtue that we find there in the stories told by Pixar.
Sure, and I think one of the reasons I wanted to put the book together was because of the concept of virtue and even wisdom, or what we might call classical virtues, things like prudence, what it used to be called, sort of practical wisdom. People don't really have a clear understanding, I don't think, of what that is today, or what understanding they do have might be negative or it might be incorrect. And really, within Christianity, we have a number of, I think, the best strengths of different ethical theories coming together in order to form what we are supposed to be as Christians. And one of those aspects is what we would consider virtue theory or virtue ethics. And, you know, it's just this quality of moral goodness, really, that is desirable in people. What we should aspire to be post-fall, I guess. You know, we've sort of fallen from where we've been. As Pascal would say, we're sort of deposed royalty. And we're trying to get back to where we are virtue-wise. And I think Pixar really has a great way of infusing their films with a lot of these classic virtues, things like justice or friendship or love or courage, things that we need to sort of, I think, continue to build in our lives daily.
Some parents were concerned about the movie Up because you're not 10 minutes into it, and already there's been a tragic loss. It really forms the premise of everything that follows after that, the death of a spouse. And they thought, this is a kid's movie. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think that Pixar is certainly to be applauded for taking that step. For, you know, they certainly, you know, did that in the film as far as depicting this life together within just a span of a few minutes. In fact, I think it's the third scene where Michael Giacchino's music is playing, called Married Life. He won an Oscar for that as well, for the score for the film. And it's essentially a silent film for a few minutes. And you just watch in a span of just a few minutes the lives of these characters until they grow old together. And one of them, you know, they want to have children and not able to. And then one of them passes away. I think that we need to face that reality. And I think Pixar has taken a courageous step in doing that, in that, you know, children's films tend to be dumbed down a lot of times, frankly. You know, these fairy tales or unrealistic expectations of life. And I think Pixar has a very good balance there of showing, well, this is reality. Life is sometimes suffering, but there's also great hope and opportunity there and transformation individually for characters, either for the better or for worse, you know, depending on the choices they make. Sort of the opposite to Carl Fredrickson's character would be Charles Muntz, who's sort of this, you know, reclusive, wealthy adventurer who ends up becoming obsessed, and his life could have been so much more than it ended up being in the film.
Let's talk a little bit about their big breakout. That was Toy Story. We're going to soon be watching the third incarnation of this story with the characters that we love. Again, kind of unlikely characters, toys that are on the edge of being forgotten by their child. What did you find in that film, Robert?
Well, Toy Story, just to give some brief background here, Toy Story came out in 1995, so we're looking, of course, at 15 years ago as the first feature-length computer-generated film. And, you know, Pixar's had quite a long history. They really weren't formed as an individual company until 1986, when Steve Jobs purchased Pixar from Lucasfilm. Lucasfilm really didn't know what to do with these guys. This was sort of a whole emerging area of creation, and they really didn't know what was going to happen with it. So Steve Jobs buys Pixar for $5 million, and 20 years later sells Pixar to Disney for $7.4 billion. So obviously there's been some great success there with the company, and it was a difficult journey, I think, to get to Toy Story, to try to get studios to understand what was happening and what they were doing and that this could actually be a film. And Toy Story really comes down to being a buddy picture. You know, you've got Woody, this cowboy doll, and Buzz Lightyear, this new science fiction type of toy, of course, voiced by Tom Hanks as Woody and Tim Allen as Buzz Lightyear, and really just learning to deal with each other, to grow as in friendship, to learn about their identity and who they are, and turning into a, just kind of an action-packed, fun film.
And when people watch this and they see these characters kind of evolve throughout the course, they really are watching, although this is animation, they're really watching human characters. About a minute to respond.
Sure. And one of the things that Pixar does is they film the actors that are doing the voices so that they can later go and computer animate some of the expressions or some of the features that these actors have so that the characters come alive, so to speak, on screen. Because obviously we don't see Tom Hanks or we don't see Tim Allen on screen. We see Buzz Lightyear, we see Woody the cowboy doll, and I think making them as realistic as possible while still keeping that computer-generated look is quite a challenge, but they do it so well that I think now we just sort of expect it without thinking about how difficult it is to do what Pixar has been doing for so many years.
We're talking about the spiritual and moral themes of Pixar films. Robert Velarde is our guest. He's author of a new book, The Wisdom of Pixar. A little bit later in the hour, we'll give away two copies of The Wisdom of Pixar. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc.
We stick together, see it through, because you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
One Father's Story.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Even though fathers have no legal say in the abortion of their unborn child, many face guilt even years after an abortion. One father says, "It has been 20 years since my ex-wife and I aborted our first child. I pray every day for forgiveness." Long after the abortion was carried out, the emotional fallout continues, at least for me. I still occasionally have sleepless nights, thinking about what we did and why. It took being the father of two great kids to make me realize that life is truly a gift. For more testimonies like this, visit the pro-life website, priestsforlife.org.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Honey!
What?
Where's my super suit?
What?
Where is my super suit?
I put it away!
Where?
Why do you need to know?
I need it!
Don't you think about running off to do it? No, Darren, do. We've been planning this dinner for 2 months.
The public is in danger!
My evening's in danger!
about the greater good.
Greater good? I am your wife. I'm the greatest good you are ever going to get.
A little bit from the movie The Incredibles, talking about the spiritual moral themes of Pixar films. That's one of the better ones, too. Robert Velarde is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, June the 3rd. I want to hear from you about the moral and spiritual themes of Pixar films. Our email address, right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at @IssuesETC, or just give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. The Incredibles was about a husband and a wife and a family, and about kind of the lost glory of youth. What were your thoughts on that movie that... If Toy Story was the breakout for Pixar, Incredibles was kind of the proof that they could continuously pull off the same trick every time.
Yes, that was an excellent film, and I love that clip. That, of course, we have Samuel Jackson voicing the character Frozone, who's, of course, a superhero, and the city is being attacked by this giant Omnidroid thing. And he's running around his apartment trying to find his supersuit because he can't find it because he wants to go out and help and fight this Omnidroid. But I think Incredibles certainly established Pixar as a much more serious company as far as the topics they could address. You know, prior to that, they had done the Toy Story movies, they had done A Bug's Life and Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo, and now suddenly in 2004 you have The Incredibles with, you know, not only an entire cast of human characters that are computer-generated, but some themes that are very, you know, deep and challenging. You know, you obviously have the good and evil combating each other going on, but you have these superheroes who have been forced underground and into hiding, basically, who can't express their abilities in public, and just the daily lives and routine that these characters go to and the family challenges that they have. I think it was an excellent film, certainly one of their finest as well.
The characters in that film for the first time were, we saw kind of the Achilles' heels, the personal flaws in each and every one of the characters. They seem to be going a little deeper in terms of that character development.
Sure, and I think that's exemplified by the main character, which would be Bob Parr, who's Mr. Incredible, was his sort of superhero persona, and he's sort of going through this midlife crisis. You know, he used to be very active, very young, very, you know, superhero, essentially, and that's how we see him at the beginning of the film. But then, you know, later, some 15 years or so later, he's in this sort of humdrum job working for this insurance corporation and just really trying to find meaning in his life and how he can relate to his wife and his children and what it is that makes him who he is and, you know, how does he get there. And, you know, the main themes I discuss in Incredibles beyond family in the book would be courage, really. And, you know, the opening sequence that you played there with Frozone looking for his supersuit, you know, I say something in the book to the effect of, well, he doesn't really stop to ponder these ethical questions about the virtue of courage. You know, he doesn't say, well, let me grab this, you know, book on ethics off the shelf and figure out what I need to do. He already has that ingrained in him, this virtue of courage, and he just acts on it. And I think that is one place where virtue ethics can help us as Christians in our daily lives. If we make the right moral choices, whether they're small ones or big ones, they will build up in our character over time to the point where we just react and make the right decision on the spot instead of having to sit there and go through all these decision-making things, you know, as far as what we need to do.
Kathy is listening in St. Charles, Missouri. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, hi. I always liked the Monsters, Inc. film as well. I always thought that it was, at least I talked to it about my kids like this, I told them it was a good example of the pro-life debate originally, you know, they used scaring to get these monsters would go in and scare these kids, and they would... Basically, they lived off of their fear, and then they found out that laughter was a much better producer for good for the kid and good for them as well. And I just likened it to the abortion debate and even stem cell debate. and talked to my kids about that and used it as a good talking point with my kids about those issues.
Kathy, thanks for listening in St. Charles. Robert.
Well, I think that's one of the wonderful things about Pixar films is they don't come right out and say certain things to you. They're not preachy, in other words, but they have themes within them that can be applied in a number of ways. And one of the first things I do in my book, The Wisdom of Pixar, is I say, well, these films are not Christian parables. These are not overtly Christian films. But within them, they do have these themes that resonate with so many people. You know, otherwise, they wouldn't have the success that they've had. Monsters, Inc. is a wonderful film. I think it's one of their funniest. And in fact, the chapter in my book on Monsters, Inc. is largely about humor and how humor can have some redemptive aspects to it. And for the listener that just commented, she'll be glad to know that Pixar is going to do a sequel to Monsters, Inc., currently slated for release in 2012.
There's one that I wanted to talk to you about that came out just a couple years ago, Ratatouille. Oddly enough, you say a film that is about aspiration, about ambition.
Right, and I think it was one of those films that it took me a couple of viewings till I really began to enjoy it more. Not that I didn't like it the first time, but it was one of those where the more I thought about it, the more it became one of my favorite Pixar films. And, of course, Ratatouille is about this rat, this rat in Paris, France, who wants to learn how to cook and become a great chef. And, you know, it certainly has the humorous elements of him teaming up with a human chef, Linguini, and trying to figure out how they can work together to sort of pull off this scam of the rat cooking while he's on top of the chef's head and controlling him and his actions. But, you know, deeper within that film, there really is a theme of ambition. And, you know, we tend to view ambition negatively as though it's a bad thing. But one thing I bring out in my book is that there are certainly positive forms of ambition and negative forms. And what we want to cultivate are those positive forms of ambition, maybe in our lives, of things God wants us to do. And Ratatouille is really a celebration of artistic and creative achievement and what we can accomplish, you know, even as Christians in the world, if we go out there and make a difference in these creative fields rather than, you know, sort of being on the periphery or trying to create our own subcultures within culture. If we could just infuse culture with Christian artistry, we could make such a difference. And Christians had done that for thousands of years. You know, prior to, I think, you know, the decrease of Christian influence in some of these areas like the arts.
Does it strike you as odd that, the films are remarkable apart from the fact that they require amazing talent, both on the part of the voice actors, but also on the part of the animators to achieve what they do. But does it strike you as odd that that these films are really exemplify the best in storytelling when, in fact, they're doing it in a medium that until very recently would not have been taken seriously by anybody? Essentially animation.
I think that they've come a long way in that regard from, you know, simple cartoons that people thought were just for kids to being taken seriously as artistic works and really grappling with serious issues and doing so in a manner that's entertaining and that draws people in and that can deal with themes that aren't just for the kids, so to speak, or films that maybe cater even more to, say, adult parents that go and the jokes are sort of over the kids' heads, you know, something that you see in maybe some of the Shrek films, for instance, that are done by DreamWorks. I think Pixar has a better balance in that regard as far as the storytelling is concerned, and very much they're focused on the story and the characters, which is what needs to happen if you want a successful film. You can have the greatest CGI work in the world, and it could be wrapped around a really bad story, and it's just not going to make the film work. And Pixar is known for spending years on some of these films. You know, we think, oh, they just finished up last year. They must have been working on Toy Story 3, you know, just for the past year. But it's something that's been in development for 3 or 4 years, sometimes spending just the first year trying to get the story right and being willing to delay films even if they don't think they're right. you know, that I think is part of the success Pixar has made with this films that they've come out with.
Well, when we come back, if you've got a little son or a grandson or a nephew, you know which of the Pixar films is their favorite. It's Cars. We'll talk about the spiritual themes in Cars on the other side of the break with Robert Velarde. 10 more minutes with him. He's a writer, educator, and philosopher, father of four children in Colorado, and author of several books, including his latest, The Wisdom of Pixar. Now, stay tuned. We're going to be giving away two copies of Robert's books, The Wisdom of Pixar, in the next 10 minutes of the program. When we come back, we'll talk about Cars, and let's see, there's WALL-E, which is, a lot of people thought this one didn't go over so well because there was so little dialogue in the beginning of the movie. I only watched it recently, and I actually found it one of the most profound ones they've actually made. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Twitter us at issuesetc. We'll be right back. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video, A Cloud of Witnesses.
What went for Mary, the angel speaks in her ear and changes who she is precisely what happens to every Christian. The Lord speaks and he changes you.
James is a great example to us of sober-minded churchmanship.
The cross looms over all of John's ministry. It's about the cross, the Lamb of God.
We see in Nicholas his love of Jesus Christ acting out in mercy for his neighbors, and we see a role model there that we can imitate.
The church, when she sets the day aside to remember St. Elizabeth, is remembering this shining light of benevolent charity and humility.
It's not a popular position, you know, to stand for true doctrine, and yet that's what Ambrose does.
You can watch A Cloud of Witnesses, our new YouTube video, under the support page at issuesetc.org. Historic, authentic Christian radio. Issues, etc.
What's so important about this race of yours, anyway?
It's not just a race. We're talking about the Piston Cup. I'll be the first rookie in history ever to win it. And when I do, we're talking big new sponsor with private helicopters.
Hey, you think maybe one day I can get a ride in one of them helicopters?
Yeah, sure.
You mean it?
Oh, yeah, anything you say.
I knew it. I knowed I made a good choice.
In what?
My best friend.
Just a scene from Cars. That's our subject for the next 10 minutes of Issues Etc., along with the other Pixar films. Robert Velarde is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. What did you find in Cars that struck you unique from the other Pixar films, Robert?
Well, of course, Cars is about cars that can talk, and obviously that's a twist they've got in the film. I think that Cars is one of the best films that depicts adventure. And what is adventure? You know, one of the taglines for the film is the phrase, life is a journey. And I have in my book, The Wisdom of Pixar, a quote from John Lasseter, one of the, you know, chief creative minds there at Pixar, who's been with them for many years. and now is also, you know, working and overseeing Disney Animation as well. And John Lasseter talked about how he had been so busy at Pixar working on so many different films, he had really neglected his family. He hadn't spent as much time with his children. He and his wife have five boys. And they took one summer, and they got an RV, and they just went out on the road in the United States and cross-country, just going, you know, stopping at different places. And he spoke about how that journey, that adventure, was such a bonding time for them as a family. And I think in Cars, we have that adventure, you know, as well as the spirit of adventure in Up. But in Cars, you have this one character, Lightning McQueen, who's this very cocky, very prideful race car who all he thinks about is winning races. And he has his life sort of planned out as to what he's going to do and how he's going to win. And he's all about really materialism and his success. And his life is sort of taken off track, you know, to use a pun, I suppose, when he ends up being lost and ends up in this little town, you know, off Route 66, this little place called Radiator Springs, where he has to sort of have a new adventure, something that's not planned, something that introduces him to new people, new things, new ways of, I think, of seeing life. And, you know, Cars, although it wasn't the best-reviewed Pixar film, it's certainly been one of their most successful financially. I mean, the film, just through merchandising alone, has made billions of dollars. In fact, I have a little boy who's almost 4 years old, and I have to say that Cars is the most watched film in my house as far as repeated viewings go.
This email comes from Daniel in Lincoln, Nebraska. He says, I recall reading an interview with one of the Wall-E writers. I can't remember the name. But he's been with Pixar for a long time, has had his fingers in many of their stories, in World Magazine. In it, he discusses how the main theme is not ecology. That was a big criticism of Wall-E. But relationships. He also stated that the titular character was meant as a sort of Christ figure in the story. Your thoughts there?
Well, I would imagine my guess there, 99%, would be that was Andrew Stanton. Andrew Stanton has been with Pixar for many years. He directed Finding Nemo and Wall-E, and Andrew Stanton is actually a pretty outspoken Christian in his beliefs. He certainly doesn't, you know, come out overtly in the films and say, well, these are, you know, Christian examples, but they're in there if you look. You know, Finding Nemo, he had said at one point, was really about, you know, faith overcoming fear. And Wall-E, you know, many people criticized Wall-E when it came out in 2008 and said, well, this is just a message movie. This is an ecology movie. This is sort of a, you know, some liberal type of movie about stewardship of the environment and things like that. But there's really far more to it. And as you mentioned before the break, you know, it's almost a silent film for the first good portion of the movie till we even see a human character speak or do anything. And, you know, it's certainly a bold risk they took in doing that. I look at more at Wall-E as a love story. And also, you know, what I do in The Wisdom of Pixar, I look at it from the perspective not of the ecology angle, but one of philosophy of technology and how we relate to technology today. You know, all the technology we have, whether it's cell phones or internet or social networking or all these different things that are going 24/7 in our lives, and what is our relationship to technology? And how can we think about it theologically and biblically and philosophically, and what does that do to us as individuals? And really, I see Wall-E as a reductio ad absurdum. And in logic and philosophy, that's sort of when an argument is reduced to an absurdity to make a point. And Wall-E is sort of saying, well, you know, look how ridiculous these lives have gotten of these human beings, where they're moving around in these mobile recliner chairs. They sort of submitted to this global corporation called By and Large. They don't even talk to each other in person. They just stare at screens all day. And it's sort of saying, well, if we let things get that way, is that going to be a good thing for us or not? And Wall-E's message is, no, it's not a good thing. We need to be more relational as opposed to lost in these cyber worlds.
You mentioned it just a moment ago, but if you would, talk briefly about Finding Nemo. What are your thoughts there?
Finding Nemo is by far my favorite Pixar film. Sometimes it's hard to pick, but I think the one that's been at the top of my list has been Finding Nemo. And that came out in 2003, And it's a story about fish. You know, you've got this these clownfish. Marlin is the father, and Nemo is the son, and they're separated from one another. And it's really the story of Marlin, the father, sort of overcoming obstacle after obstacle just to get to his son because of the love he has for him, because of this family bond that they have. And even though they're separate for most of the movie, you know, they each learn things about each other. The son, Nemo, learns some things and overcomes some challenges, and the father learns essentially to be how to be a better parent. And I think what hit me with that movie is just the father-son relationship. You know, I have four children, and they're all boys, so I certainly could relate to that Finding Nemo and what they did with that film. And I still think it's one of their finest films.
Finally, then, talk about something you mentioned before, and that is these films managed to walk the tightrope of extolling the best that we can find, even in fallen mankind, the best that we can find there, and extolling these virtues without being overtly preachy and without falling over into, as you said, Christian parables. With about a minute and a half, talk about that.
Sure, and that's certainly one thing that I don't think is as positive that we tend to do within Western Christianity. We sort of try to create these little subcultures of things or mimic them instead of just doing the best we can with the artistry and the gifts God has given us. And certainly, I think there are some responses Christians have to culture. One is to sort of entrench ourselves and sort of avoid it. Another is to embrace it uncritically. And I think the better option is to engage culture intelligently and do the best we can with what God has given us to make a difference in this world positively for the kingdom of Christ.
All right, callers 9 and 15 are going to get the new book, The Wisdom of Pixar. So call now, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Callers 9 and 15, get the new book by our guest, Robert Velarde, The Wisdom of Pixar, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Robert Velarde is a writer and educator and philosopher, father of four in Colorado, and he's author of several books. His latest, The Wisdom of Pixar. Robert, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd. And if I could add real quick, if people want to find out more about the book, just go to thewisdomofpixar.com.
You can also purchase The Wisdom of Pixar under the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Dr. Norman Nagel yet again about the doctrine of the Trinity. It's a fitting subject here in the opening weeks of the Pentecost season. We'll talk about God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. One of the main themes that Dr. Nagel always emphasized when I sat as one of his students in the seminary classroom was that you can't pull the three apart. That when you have the Father, you have the Son and the Spirit. When you have the Spirit, you have the Father and the Son. When you have the Son, you have the Spirit and the Father. This is one God, three persons, and we dare not pull them apart or do damage to the gospel itself. And speaking of the gospel, here's a story that probably wouldn't work well as an animated film. And yet it is the beating heart that drives all true Christian virtue. What these films, Pixar, borrow from, wittingly or unwittingly, they borrow from something that can only truly be produced by the righteousness of Christ himself. And we don't fault them for that. To borrow from this is to extol what is best in the world, the goodness and the beauty that remains even in a fallen world. But they are borrowing. They're borrowing from something that only God can provide. All the beauty and the virtue that we see there, that we love to watch, that we see in those characters, think about it this way. It all truly is embodied in the incarnate Son of God, Jesus Christ. We talk about his perfect righteousness. And we talk about his holiness and what he has given us by living for us and laying down his life for us and dying and rising again. An amazing story that you can hardly animate. It had to simply happen once, and all we do now is proclaim it. Embodied in this God-man, Jesus Christ, all those virtues. And what makes it most remarkable is not that he simply lives those virtues, but that he lives them for you and for me, sinners, and that he gives them to us through his death and resurrection for us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.